Bibles, open them to Genesis 20. And the first thing we're going to look at is this instance between Abraham and Abimelech. Now, read verses 1 through 7 of Genesis chapter 20. And Abraham tells a lie. What is the lie that Abraham tells about Sarah? That Sarah is my sister. Now, if you read on down, if you read down to verse 12, what is the half-truth? She is his half-sister. But think about the context of Genesis and where we are in the story of Abraham. What is the insanity of what Abraham is doing right here? He's already told that lie, and it really, he got caught on it once before, but there's something even more insane about what he's doing now. He's giving her to the king so that she will be Abimelech's wife. Why is that entirely insane at this point in history? What?
Have they already received the promise of Isaac?
Well, have they? Look in Genesis 19. Yes. Sarah is supposed to have a son by Abraham. And now he's giving her to this other man, and it could be confusing as to whose child Sarah would be bearing if she was given to the king. So the birth of Isaac had just been promised. What is Abraham doing? He has completely lost his mind. So what did Abimelech do concerning Sarah? In his innocence, what did he do? He took her. He took Sarah to be his wife. So God responded to Abimelech. And in verses 1 through 7, particularly verse 3, what was God's response to Abimelech concerning, and that shouldn't be a capital H, concerning his, that's Abimelech's life, not God's life. Concerning Abimelech's life, what was God's response to Abimelech? You're a dead man. That's funny. Because he particularly says, I didn't know, I'm sorry, I don't want to die. Concerning Sarah, what did he tell Abimelech?
She's married.
She's married. Okay, application. Is God concerned about marriage? Marriage vows, marriage fidelity, very much so. And so should you. Some of y'all out there are married, and some of y'all out there will one day be married. You need to take your marriage vows very seriously. God does. He just says, you are a dead man, because the woman you have taken is married. And God does not look upon that favorably at all. Yes?
Well, then, like, obvious kings and, like, it's on the current
They did. That's a good question. I'm going to give my personal answer. I think they were wrong. I think from the very beginning it was never intended to be so.
Having multiple wives is punishment,
right? Well, Solomon did, both David and Solomon did, in some sense, pay for their actions. David sought a wife that didn't belong to him, and he was punished the rest of his life, even from within his own family. And Solomon's heart was turned away from God. And when his son took rule, Rehoboam, the kingdom was split. So they did suffer consequences. It's not in, I don't know that you can find a verse in the law that says one man, one woman, but it is the design from creation. When you go to Romans chapter 7, and it talks about a man is bound to his wife as long, or a woman's bound to her husband as long as he lives, when I forget which pronoun they use. When one of them dies, the other one's free to marry another. It doesn't even give the possibility of being married to two people. And in the Sunday school lesson we had in Isaiah 4:1, it talks about seven women agreeing to marry one man. That was insane. So it's not intended to be that way. That's a good question. Everybody brings it up. Because there's nothing ever said that David did that was wrong. Solomon, his heart was turned away from God. That was certainly wrong. He should not have married foreign wives, for sure. That is commanded not to do. But good question. Okay, concerning Abraham, what did God say to Abimelech concerning Abraham? He's a prophet. How many of y'all ever thought Abraham was a prophet? He's not one of the ones you think of when you think of the prophets, but what would Abraham do for Abimelech? Pray for him. He's a prophet. Restore his wife. And he will pray for you. Do you find this ironic? It's Abraham's fault that this has happened. But Abraham will pray for Abimelech to keep Abimelech from being put to death. For being led astray by Abraham's lie. Okay, the response of Abraham and Abimelech. What was Abimelech's response in all this to Abraham? A little louder. Yeah, he's innocent. He didn't know, but when he was speaking to... That's what he said when he was speaking to God. He may have said something very similar. Yes, in verse 9. He asked, "What have you done to us? Why did you do this? I don't understand it. What did we do that caused you to put me in a position to be a dead man?" What was Abraham's response? I thought you would kill me. Okay, application. Why is that strange? He's been promised a son. He can't die. He can't die. So there was a little bit of shakiness here. he said in verse 11, I thought surely there is no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Now, do you know how old Sarah is? About 90. But apparently she was a good-looking 90-year-old woman. You're really testing me now, aren't you? It actually says in 1 Peter or 2 Peter that Sarah is the example of godly women for obeying her husband. That's where you're really testing me. No, it's not right to do what is wrong. It's never right to do what's wrong. So would it be right for Sarah to commit adultery just to obey Abraham? No. But again, we're at the point that nothing's ever said about Sarah doing wrong. In fact, what's interesting is nothing in this chapter is said about Abraham doing wrong. Who did wrong? Abimelech. He was the one who was going to be struck dead. Okay. Do I understand how to put all that together? Not exactly. I do know that Abraham was not doing what was right. It's not right to lie. I do know that he wasn't fully trusting God because no one could kill him. He was promised a son. And I do know he was acting very foolishly because he had been promised a son, and giving his wife to someone else right after he was promised a son is ludicrous.
So Abimelech still did wrong even though he
was innocent, even though he was uninformed. Yes. Let me think of another illustration of that. I know it seems unjust that God would hold Abimelech guilty for Abraham's lie. But in a sense, none of us are innocent. But in this particular issue, this is very difficult for me to put together. Maybe there's other realities going on at this time that aren't recorded. I don't know. But I've personally had difficulty with this, why Abimelech was the one who was held guilty for Abraham's lie, and why Sarah didn't speak up. Sarah, why didn't you speak up? Emily.
Verse 6.
Yeah.
And it says, I also kept you from sinning against me.
Very good. Very good.
It was my idea that maybe it was almost like a threat of future sin.
Yeah. It is that Abimelech is being kept from doing what is wrong. You are correct. Very good observation for verse 6. It's as though God is putting the fear of God in Abimelech's heart. And Abimelech is pleading for mercy. I didn't do anything wrong. And God says, you're right. And the reason why you didn't is because I was in charge. Very good observation. So that may somewhat answer some of our questions, but this is somewhat of a difficult situation to explain in all of its aspects.
You don't have anything that shows Abimelech had faith, right?
Say again?
Abimelech wasn't trusting in God, was he?
It doesn't say that, but he did do what God said. Seems like he feared God, but it doesn't say he has faith. Very good comments, questions, and participation. All right, and then the rest of chapter 20 talks about how Abraham and Abimelech make this agreement, and Abimelech gives Abraham some sheep and goats and silver. And verse 16, "Behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, it is your vindication before all who are with you and before all men. You are cleared." And Abraham prayed to God, and he healed Abimelech and his wife and his maids so that they bore children. And so the situation gets resolved, and Abraham and Sarah go on their way. And we come to chapter 21, where we have the birth of Isaac. Now, the birth of Isaac was according to what?
Can I ask a question?
Absolutely. That's why we're here. That's interesting to think about, but I don't know.
I was just wondering.
Yeah, how would they know that the wombs were closed if they were there for a week? Yeah, I don't know. If they were there for a couple of years, then you would understand that. But whether they were there for a week or a couple of years, God can close the womb for as long or as short a period of time as he wants. So I'm not entirely sure, it doesn't say. But
well, the birth of Lot is promised that this time next year, you will have a son. So it could be more than a year from the promise, right?
Yeah, it probably wasn't any longer than a year, yep, because the birth of the promise of Isaac was given, and he's born in chapter 21.
Did I say Lot?
Yeah. Okay, so chapter 21. Any other questions that I can't answer? Okay, in chapter 21, the birth of Isaac takes place, and it is according to what? The promise. It's according to the promise of God. Okay, now this goes back to our brain burner of last week. What is the application to Ishmael? Ishmael is not what? A son of promise. He's not the promised one. And therefore, he won't what? He won't receive the promise. He won't receive the inheritance. He will not be an heir with the son of promise. And that led to our Galatians and Romans study, that we basically, or I basically, came to the conclusion that the flesh and the spirit are two different ways of thinking, two different ways of justification. They're completely disjoint sets, and you can't have one with the other. Therefore, Ishmael has to leave. Okay, his name was not Lot, but Isaac, which means laughter. Now, why is laughter a good name for Isaac?
Sarah laughed.
Yeah, Sarah laughed and Abraham laughed. Everybody was laughing when they were told that they were going to have a son. So laughter's a good name for this child. Okay, he is born to, number one, who was his father? Abraham, who was How old?
100 years old.
And how did Abraham show his obedience and his faith when Isaac was born? He circumcised his son. When? At 8 days old. Exactly what God said. Not at 7 days old, not at 9 days old, but exactly at 8 days old, doing exactly what the Lord commanded him. And his mother was Sarah, who was 90 years old, and Isaac gave her 6, laughter, pleasure. I have a friend who's 1 year younger than I am, and I received a Christmas card from him yesterday, and he said, "We finally got our baby girl who's 8 months old." And I thought, what? Then it talked about sharing the bowl with the cat. So I don't know if he got a baby girl cat, a baby girl dog, or what. I don't know what he was talking about. But when I read he had an 8-month-old child at 54 years old, I thought, you got to be kidding me. But Sarah was 90, and yet it gave her great pleasure to have this child of promise, this child from her husband Abraham at 90 years old. Okay, on the back. This was the main thing we talked about last week, the separation. What was the cause? Why was there a need for a separation? Yes. Ishmael was mocking Isaac. So, Sarah, you weren't too tolerant of that, were you? No. So what did you say about Ishmael? What did Sarah say about Ishmael? Drive him out. Get him out of here. And what did she say about Isaac? He was the heir. He is the only heir. Was she right? She was entirely right. Ishmael needed to leave because Isaac was the only heir. So what was Abraham's response when he heard Sarah make this proposition, drive out Ishmael because Isaac is the only heir? What was Abraham's response? He was distressed greatly. Ishmael was his boy. His now how old boy? 14-year-old boy. A 14-year-old boy and a 100-year-old dad probably had built up quite a relationship with one another, maybe going hunting, working in the fields, etc. Abraham was greatly distressed to have his 14-year-old boy being driven out. So what was God's answer to Abraham? Concerning Abraham, what did he say? Don't be distressed. God does this a lot. Even in the Christmas story, the shepherds were what? In the King James, they were sore afraid. And what did the angel say? Don't be afraid. How do you say that? I mean, you just see angels and you think that when you see angels, it means the judgment of God is coming upon you and you're sore afraid. And the angel says, don't be afraid. So you immediately just calm down. I don't know. But God is constantly reminding his people not to be distressed, not to be afraid, not to be fearful, because he's the one who's in charge. That's not always easy. Concerning Sarah, what did he say? Okay, now what verse is that in? 12. Is that your life verse, Sarah? The middle of verse 12 says, whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her. Got that underlined twice and highlighted? Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her and do it. Yes. Just have that Genesis 21:12 on a little stick. Do what Sarah tells you to do. Because Sarah was right. Concerning Isaac, what did he say? A little louder.
He's the heir descendant.
Yeah, he's the one through whom the descendants will be named. He is the heir. Sarah is correct. Only Isaac will be the heir. He is the one through whom your descendants will be named. And concerning Ishmael, what did he say? I'll make him a great nation also. So don't worry about your 14-year-old boy. I'll take care of him. So Abraham's obedience, what did he do? He sent them away when? The very next day. Early the next morning. Abraham's one of those people that when you ask him to do something, he gets it done. He does it as soon as possible. When he was told to circumcise himself, his son Ishmael, and his servants, he did it immediately. When he was told he needed to drive Ishmael out, he did it immediately. He didn't delay in his obedience. He did it immediately. So he sent Hagar and Ishmael away. And now, in verses 15 through 21, we see God's care for Ishmael. What was Hagar's concern? That what? They ran out of water, and what would happen? Hello? Yes, and she would have to what? Watch it. She didn't want to have to see her son die. Who does? So God had an answer for Hagar. To Hagar, what did he say? Yeah, he said, don't be afraid. But before he said, don't be afraid, what did he say? What's the matter with you? He appealed to that Institute of Higher Education, what's a matter you? For those of you who enjoy Rocky and Bullwinkle, what's a matter you? Why did he say, what's the matter with you? He promised to make Ishmael a great nation, so he's not going to die. What else would be a problem? That's an excellent answer. What's another problem? Why is God saying this to Hagar? This happened 14 years ago. And at that time, Hagar was the culprit. She was boasting about having a child that Sarah couldn't have. And what happened then? Right, Sarah cast her out, and God listened to her then too, didn't he? And that's when she said, God is a God who hears. Well, did he change? No, is he still a God who hears? Yes, so what's the matter with you? We've gone through this before. We've already discussed this. I haven't changed. So he says, what's the matter with you? Let's see, what verse was that in? 17. And he says, do not fear. God has heard the voice of the lad. God is a God who hears. I heard the voice of the lad. So A, B, and C, there's about five things you could put in there. But one of them is, what's the matter with you? What would be another one that you would put in A, B, and C? I heard the lad. Do not fear. I heard the lad, and I will make him a great nation. Like I said, there's about five things in there. It says, arise, lift up the lad, hold him by the hand. I will make him a great nation. Do not fear, for God has heard the voice of the lad. So he says some encouraging words to Hagar, and then he makes a provision. What's the provision that he gives them? A well of water. Just to prove that the child will not die, there's some water, and they'll take care of him. So I have C, compare this with Genesis 16. What do you think happened in Genesis 16? She got thrown out for the first time. That's what I wanted us to make the comparison to. She already knows that God has promised to make him a great nation. Turn back to Genesis 16, verse 11. Let's look at verse 9. Then the angel of the Lord said to her, return to your mistress and submit yourself to her authority. Moreover, the angel of the Lord said to her, I will greatly multiply your descendants so that they too shall be too many to count. The angel of the Lord said to her further, behold, you are with child. You shall bear a son, and you shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has given heed to your affliction. And he will be a wild donkey of a man, and his hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand will be against him, and he will live to the east of his brothers. Then she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, thou art a God who sees. For she said, have I even remained here after seeing him? So this has already taken place. She's been promised a son. And even with the promise that was made to Abraham in chapter 21, Ishmael will be a great nation. And so there was really no need for Hagar to be concerned that she would see the death of her son, because God had made these promises. Genesis 21, 22 through 24, Abraham's covenant with Abimelech. What was the covenant about? Property? Yes, but something particular on a piece of property. A well. Wells were very important because that's where we get water. And water is very important to stay alive. You think that's funny? Okay, all right, maybe funny. Okay, so the argument and the need to establish this covenant was concerning a well. And the name of that well became Beersheba, which means
oh,
I don't have the name of Beersheba. Anybody know what Beersheba means? Is it in the margin of your Bible? I don't think it's in the margin of mine. Yes. Beersheba means well of the oath. They gave, it says, Abraham gave Abimelech 7 ewe lambs as a witness, and this well now belongs, and everybody understands it belongs to Abraham. Okay, we're going to close in just a minute or two. If you have more questions, we can answer them. But the next class, Sunday, December 27th, a week from today, there's no class. Sunday, January 3rd, 2009, we're going to have lesson 17, if anybody will be here. It will be 2010. Forgot to cut and paste. You will be here?
I will be here.
Okay, then we will have it. Let me calm your fears and give Courtney something very interesting. It's week 17 of the NFL on lesson 17 of our Bible study.
Yes!
Do you find that to be entertaining?
Yes, I do.
I thought you might. So, anyway, the Cowboy-Eagles game is at 1 p.m. So, you don't have to worry about that. And there's no college football that night.
Wait, but that is the day of once a month for lunch for the young adults.
Well, is that a problem?
Well,
y'all have to decide that. Yeah, you'll have to watch the game at the Coopers or something. I'm just talking about Sunday night. What?
Yeah,